Hey, it's Jake, and welcome to the Setlist Podcast. This week on the show, we have Lydia Luce. Lydia has a new album coming out this Friday called Dark River. On the show, we discuss toxic relationships, traumatic tornado experiences, mythology from all around the world. Yeah, a lot of good stuff. I had a great time talking with Lydia, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Before we proceed, I did want to apologize. We had a little bit of technical difficulties in the beginning here, and it's not going to be the same audio quality listeners of this podcast have been accustomed to. So there may be a little bit more ambient noise, but overall, the conversation should be coming in clear. So my apologies for the technical difficulties. And without any further ado, this is Lydia Luce.
Yeah. So are you in Nashville?
I am. Where are you based?
As of recently, we are in upstate New York.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's pretty. You guys got a lot of snow, right?
Oh, man. It has been insane. Yeah, we have a ton of snow.
That's awesome. I've seen pictures. It looks beautiful. We get that's weenie snow here, like maybe half an inch and then it melts in an hour.
Yeah. Yep. I know how that goes. We were in the South for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, I loved your new album. I was thrilled to be able to get an early listen to it.
Oh, thanks. I'm so glad you liked it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I know you're known for your instrumentals, and rightfully so. The instrumentals on the album are incredible. I've heard some of your other work, and it's just top notch. But I gotta tell you, your songwriting to me just operates at a different level.
Thanks. Wow.
No, I was curious if you have like people that you work with writing, or if it's something that you do more solo, because like I said, I was just really impressed by some of the lyrics in your music on this new album.
Yeah, thank you. I do co-write. The record is about half and half. So half of the songs I wrote myself, and then half of the songs I wrote with other people. And I just started doing that. Like, I lived in LA before this. And then when I moved here, I just kind of jumped into the like co-writing scene. And it's awesome. It's very like, I view it like, if I'm a fan of somebody and I get to write with them, it's super fun. And also like, if somebody else has like a certain skill set that I don't have, I'm just like not as good at, it's like a superpower. So like we're getting to mesh our skill sets together and create something. I'm definitely a fan of it.
Yeah. So on this album, Dark River, is that the first time you did any kind of co-writing?
No, I did some for the last record as well. I started doing it when I moved here. And I think the last record's about 50-52.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I know it's a very personal album too. So it's cool that you were able to, you know, bounce some of these, you know, kind of personal subjects like off of somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like a therapy session. And
sure.
It's obviously like I don't co-write with a lot of people. Obviously this year I've only written with one person and we wore masks, but I haven't explored the Zoom co-write yet, but
sure, that makes it a little more difficult.
Yeah, I'm still like, I don't know if I want to do that, man. Like the vaccine's coming, like maybe we just wait. But
yeah, just wait it out.
Yeah. But yeah, it is vulnerable. Like, and I kind of trust usually the person that I'm going into the sessions with. But I also feel like it's just a safe space. Like when you're vulnerable, then the other person, it's like an invitation for them to be vulnerable. So
sure.
I think co-writing is such a, it's a really beautiful, strange thing that we do. Just expressing, like just sharing our deep personal stories with this sometimes stranger. And I don't have like a publishing company, so I'm not doing like, I don't do it like a job, co-writes. I do it for my own craft, but for like fun. So I'm not like getting into rooms every day with like strangers, but people do that and they just share their secrets and their stuff. And that's how you get like really beautiful, vulnerable songs. So I'm grateful for it.
Yeah, it's really cool. I also wondered, you know, when I was listening to some of the lyrics, like I'm a huge dork is what I'm getting to. But like, I'm really into like myths and legends and, you know, Carl Jung and, you know, stuff like, yeah. So, yeah. All right. So that already tells me something. I don't get like a cheer for Carl Jung very often. So some of like the imagery and like symbolism that you were using in your songs, like I was curious if there are stories that you draw from or, you know, people like Carl Jung that you look to. And so it's just like a lot of mythical and like powerful symbolism in your lyrics. So I was curious where that comes from.
That's cool. Sometimes it's planned and then sometimes it's not, I feel like. Like, it's so interesting because I kind of write, it's all very personal, except for, I don't know if you've heard the song on the last record, Helen, but that was a song. Story. And that was from a story of this man who stayed on the side of Mount St. Helens when everybody was like, she's going to explode. You need to move. And everybody had evacuated. But he was like, I'm not leaving my house. Like, this is my home. And so he ended up dying. But that story was really compelling to me. And so that was a song that came from a story. But the new record, I'm actually reading this book. I think there's a lot of symbolism that I wasn't aware of until like now. Like I just started reading this book about like feminine divinity, and it's by Sue Monk Kidd. And she talks a lot about Carl's work. She's a big fan.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and so I'm realizing like there's a lot of snake references.
There's a ton.
I love that. I'm like, oh hell yeah, that is totally the intention. Like, I don't know, but I didn't realize that until really this month. So the snake represents feminine power. And actually on my record, the CD. I still made CDs. I don't know why, but
no, it's cool. That's the move for sure.
Yeah. The CD is actually, my partner is a illustrator and an animator, and so he designed it's a snake that's eating its own tail.
Oh yeah, that's the. Here we go. I'm about to really nerd out. That's
let's go.
I think it's called the Ouroboros, and it's like the dragon or the snake, the serpent that eats its own tail. It's like the symbol of chaos or feminine, you know, like you said, feminine power.
So maybe there is that in there, but I just kind of write from, I don't know, it's very personal, like vulnerable stories. And I've definitely done a lot of like, I consider myself like a spiritual person. Like I grew up in Christianity and like the church, but I'm not a Christian anymore. And I feel like I'm more of a spiritual person now, but I think like a lot of the work that I've been doing in therapy and like with just learning about myself and diving into like the dark pockets of myself and like uncovering stuff, I think that comes out. And a lot of that's like what Carl talks about. And like,
yeah.
And like, I'm a big Ram Dass fan. I don't know.
Oh, very cool. Like
Ram Dass, but yeah. So
love Ram Dass.
Yeah. I think a lot of that comes from that. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I don't mean to make this like a, you know, historic, you know, like a History Channel podcast where we just talk about mythology the whole time. But it is kind of cool, like this idea of like the collective unconscious. And when you're, you know, you write something so personal, and then for some reason, these symbols or like these metaphors like come up, and they come up again and again throughout time, you know, and so many different people from so many different places in the world and times during the world come up with like similar references. And it's just interesting, you know, when you start thinking about like, huh, I wonder why, like, I compared this relationship or this experience to like, you know, a looming snake in the grass or something like that, you know, a snake in the tall grass or feeling to that. And, you know, it's just, it's interesting when those very personal things can be tied to something so old. Yeah.
There is one more symbol that I'm discovering. Another thing that I discovered in this book that is in this record is my reference to labyrinths. And I actually,
yes.
I haven't talked about this yet, but I almost named the record Labyrinth. And there's like this part of me that's like, oh man, maybe that was it. But whatever, we're moving on. And maybe
no.
The record will be called that. But that's another thing that Sue Monk Kidd talks a lot about in her like journey to spiritual or to feminine divinity, and talking about like the labyrinth of ourselves and just humans, of like we're such complex entities, and we're just constantly learning about ourselves. And I did reference another relationship story about the couple being in the labyrinth. And so, yeah, it's interesting. Like, it is interesting how that stuff comes out. And she also talks a lot about dreams. And I feel like that's another thing that, like, why do we dream some stuff that we dream? Like,
yeah.
And what does it mean? And I think it's really up to the interpreter to go there or not. Like, if I have a dream that involves snakes and labyrinths, and I'm like, oh, that was weird. Maybe I ate too much junk food. Then that, or if I'm like, oh wow, I had this dream about snakes and labyrinths. Like, what is going on in myself? And I think it's like it's our choice to go there. And so I can go there and dive in and just like journal and think about that. Like, what does that mean to me? Like, is my female identity being questioned? Am I feeling lost in that? Is that what that means? So it's really up to the, it's up to, and so that too, like listening to the record, it's also up to the interpreter that's listening to it and wanting to, whatever that means to them. So
yeah, it is really interesting to think about like what dreams mean, if they mean anything. Like, no one really knows. But I did read a really cool book maybe a year or two ago called Why We Sleep. And it's just such a great, I think Matt Walker, Dr. Matthew Walker is the author. I think he's from UCLA. You went to UCLA, right?
Yeah.
For viola?
Yes.
Yeah. That's impressive. But what he was talking about in the book, maybe you bumped into him in the hallway, but he was saying that like, while, you know, dreams, we don't quite understand. We do know that when you sleep, you are really going over and integrating stuff from the day, like experiences that you had from the day, you know, kind of from an emotional standpoint, but also from a physical standpoint. And I wondered for you, like as a classically trained musician, one of the things kind of referenced in the book was how maybe when you're learning to play an instrument, you'll be struggling with something, you know, a progression or whatever it is during the day, and then you sleep on it. And then the next day when you go to practice, it's like, whoa, this got worked out for me. And for some reason I can do it. Have you ever had that kind of experience?
Yes, for sure. And I find that with songwriting too, where for me, it's like, I just view it as like, man, you just need to walk away from that. Like, your head is too jumbled. My mind's like too jumbled with the possibilities, or like, or just if I'm struggling with it and can't kind of figure out the, can't problem solve it, then yeah, you just got to walk away from it, sleep it off, like start again the next day when your mind's fresh. And then maybe, yeah. And maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm working it out in my dreams, but if anything, it's like, well, you've slept and then you wake with a new perspective, and just each day we have the ability to kind of do that, like to wake with a new perspective. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think like some of the science that he brought up in that book kind of, goes with what you're saying, because, you know, I think they do have a way of like showing, like, especially for patterns, you know, like music or things like that, that your brain just like while you're asleep is just like running over that pattern, like hundreds or thousands of times. And then you, when in the morning, you know, like it's weird how emotionally or with something, you know, physical or like a practice like that, like you do feel somewhat refreshed. Like you go to bed pissed, and for some reason when you wake up, like you're not as mad as you were when you fell asleep. And I don't know what that is, other than maybe your brain's going to work while you're asleep.
Yeah. Or maybe just like it's exhausting sometimes. Like I'm just thinking of now classical music and the physical exhaustion of and the repetition of, like, I mean, I don't do this these days. Like when I practice, it's for, I do, my viola life is now like sessions and not like classical music. But when I was at UCLA or when I have done it in school, and really been focusing on classical music, like the repetition and the intensity of the practice is so exhausting, and like physically, emotionally, like mentally. And so just to actually take the physical rest so that you can come back and that, like, and you're, it's physical and mental rest, and you can come back and be refreshed, is so important. And yeah, I think sometimes we forget that we also need, we're just little flowers. We need to like close up at night and just, I don't know, recharge, but yeah, not kind of grind into the ground, because I think that's when either you get so frustrated that you're like, oh, I hate this, I don't want to do this anymore, or you get physically injured.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. So you were, I think I was reading that your mom was a composer professionally. Is that right?
She was a classical conductor.
Oh, a conductor. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yes. No worries. She probably really, I know she wishes she could compose, but she's she like, yeah. So she went and got her doctorate's degree in conducting. And when I was growing up, like she was, I mean, there weren't many female conductors at that time. So she's definitely a badass. Like she,
I'm sure.
My brother and I play string instruments. And so she kind of like wanted us to grow up in that environment as well. And so we ended up, she taught us piano. She started teaching us piano when we were three. And then when we were six and seven, she put a violin and a cello in our hands. So my brother plays cello and I played violin at first. And then, yeah, we just kind of like grew up in this really intense classical world. And it was like, and thinking about like her preparation for shows and for the concerts and stuff, I guess they're called concerts, not shows. She would like study these scores that had like 20 something lines of different information, different instruments, different like parts. And that's so cool. Like I can't imagine, like, that is so much information for our brains to, not only was she having to learn them and like, but then be the guide to the orchestra, the whole orchestra of people playing different parts and then leading them in that. So, and also making it musical and beautiful. So there's so much that goes into what she does, but
yeah, that's a lot of spinning plates. It's definitely overwhelming with someone like me who has very fragile discipline, you know. that's a lot to consider.
Yeah, it really is. And she was very good. Now she is retired and she has horses and she's like living her best life. just hanging out with horses. And actually, she just excels in what she does. Like, not only does she hang out with horses, but her horse is like the top dressage horse, like 1 second in the country or something.
Whoa.
Last weekend. So she's like she told me her goal was to be an Olympic level rider by the time she's 80. So my mom's really intense.
Like, wow. Yeah. Your mom needs a YouTube channel. Sounds like she's going to put Gary Vita, you know, to shame.
Yeah. She's just kind of like, I feel like she sets her mind to something, and then like she goes every day to her the horses from like 9 till 6. Like, she has a job.
Wow.
So she's very dedicated, always has been, and kind of instilled that in us too. Like, we're obviously with classical music, you have to be very dedicated, and it takes a lot of work and time.
Yeah. So growing up like that, and then having this kind of clear path to be, you know, a classical musician, what made you want to diverge into, you know, more of the singer-songwriter space?
I think it kind of started, so I went to, my first college was a classical conservatory, and while I was there, I was practicing my butt off, and just like, I was there for viola, and while I was there, I discovered this girl in Rossi who played viola and sang and did a lot of songwriting, and I just kind of like fell in love with her music, and then started experimenting on my own. And while I was in college, I would go to open mics and play, just like show up by myself and just like play some of my songs. And I really enjoyed the creativity of that. And while I was like, I don't know, classical music, you are creative, but it's very much like, we're all being told to play like the greats. Like, there's like 5 great people, whatever, 5 great violists, 5 great violinists. And it requires so much perfection. And there's not much room for just like experimenting and like making it your own. Like, you can't go off and just start, I don't know, shredding in a concerto. So I think part of it comes from that too. Like, I really didn't want the boundaries of classical music, and I wanted to be able to just expand and kind of take what I had learned and how like the music education that I grew up with, but then kind of take off from that. And so I got really into songwriting. And it kind of like, I didn't get serious about it. Like, oh, I'm going to do this as a profession until maybe 6 years ago while I was at UCLA. So I kept chasing this, like, well, I should do classical music. Like, I've been playing viola and violin since I was 6. Like, I should do this. So, it took me a really long time to be like, no, you can do other things. Like, maybe this isn't it. There's other.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Is there something that comes to mind, Lydia, when you think about, you know, when you made the decision to like, or what gave you the confidence, maybe is a better way to put it, to like do this version of music at a high level as well?
I don't know when I got that confidence, but I think like there was a song I wrote for my brother when I was at UCLA. He got married, and I wrote it as a wedding gift, and people just loved it. And I was kind of like, oh, maybe I, part of it was the validation of like, oh, maybe I can do this. And so that was maybe the first song that I was like, oh, okay. Like, maybe there's something here and I should keep working at this and hacking away at it. But I do think for me, having the option of also being able to do session work and also being able to, you know, make a living as a violinist or a violist was, felt like a safety net, and also kind of still feels that way, because it's so unpredictable music. Like, I'm going to keep making records, but I don't know, maybe like anything could change. And
sure.
It's such a weird industry, and it's such a, and there's so many like gatekeepers like that call the shots. So I think that there was always that made me like, well, I have this, so let me just be fearless at the songwriting thing, because no matter what, like I have something to fall back on. So,
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, especially with, you know, with an industry as volatile as music, yeah. Like having something like what you have, you know, seems like such a gift. And I think it's such a myth that, you know, or a fallacy that people are like, you always, in every situation, if you want to be successful, you've got to burn the boats if you want to take the island. And I just feel like that is not true. Like, sometimes with something really creative, I found this for myself, like, you've got to push the boundaries of your own creativity, you've got to have some semblance of stability somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it doesn't, it's like when I'm trying to work or write a song, but my room's messy. Like,
absolutely.
Focus. Like, you can't just go all the way there and let your mind be free to create when you're constant. And honestly, like, I don't know how so many artists do it. There's so many struggling artists, especially right now, like, where, you know, it's hard to make money. And then, so just not having that stability, and then also still trying to be free to create. And that's really difficult. So yeah, I'm really grateful for that education and just the ability to, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, and I still enjoy it too. So it's not even, I'm still doing session work throughout the pandemic. It's just, it looks a lot different, and we're wearing masks, and it's like a couple people in a room, but like, I still really love that too. So it's not even like, well, I guess I'll go get this job that I hate. I still actually sure. love that too.
Yeah. Well, and you already mentioned too, that, like, you know, having your mom, who was so successful in her domain, and it turns out probably any domain that she decides she wants to be in. But like, being able to have that discipline from one art or one craft, and then being able to like take it into something different. And not that, you know, they're still both music, like classical or this more folk or whatever genre you define your music by, but having something where you learn like the fundamentals, or you learn like how to manage yourself, basically, is what I'm trying to say. Like, when you can figure out how to work with yourself in one aspect, like, then when you try to take up a different domain, you already kind of know how you work and how you can manage yourself.
Yes. Yeah, that's so true. It's like, I think classical music taught me, and also my mom, like, she was always like, it kind of teaches you the discipline that you need to the discipline, like the kind of people skills that I don't think all classical musicians have people skills, but, like, just to kind of, I don't know, like, show up early, like, you know, don't be an asshole. be easy to work with, like, or I don't know, just be yourself, whatever. I don't know. But yeah, it definitely taught a discipline that I can carry now into whatever I choose to do. But I think it will probably still be music, unless some days I dream of being a marine biologist. But.
I understand the impulse. yeah, but I mean, especially, well, in places like Nashville, but in any major city in America or mostly worldwide, like, it's not like there's a shortage of talent. Like, I am blown away by the talent that I see on Spotify with like 3 listeners a month.
Oh,
and
wow.
So, you know, so having, having the discipline, like to, you know, make deadlines and like be yourself without being an asshole, you know, it's like, is I think a huge advantage, because like, I know so many people that are just like raw talent, that have never had that kind of foundation of reaching success, or even failure for that matter. Like sometimes when you do something that you suck at and you do it for a long time, like at least you can see like, all right, well, I do suck at this and maybe this isn't my thing, but I see like what has to be done, like in order to be successful at this, in this field. And some people never ever get that in sports or music or whatever it is, school. And then, so they're just walking around as raw talent and not really sure how to harness it.
Yeah. I think it also takes a lot of like, it's not going to go right away. Like, and not every, it takes kind of, I don't want to say confidence. That's not really the word I'm looking for, but like belief in yourself enough to, like confidence in your art, maybe, to know that like not everybody's gonna like it and that's okay, and just to keep like at it and be consistent at it, because a lot of things aren't gonna go right away, and it's really hard, and you have to love it enough to like and believe in it enough to just kind of keep waking up and like shooting in the dark, and yeah, it's really hard though.
It is. It's super hard. My buddy and I are always talking about, you know, in creative pursuits or, you know, just difficult things in general. Like, I don't know. There's like this meme that we send back and forth, or this GIF where it's like the seed, you know, the seedling that's like just struggling at the top of the soil forever and then finally bust through, but it just takes a long time, and like maybe you feel like you're banging your head against a wall for years, and then all of a sudden, yeah, I guess your head goes through the wall. That wasn't a great metaphor, but you know what I'm saying. But you know what I'm saying.
I get you. Well, maybe there's something good on that other side of the wall. You needed to use your head to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's true. And it feels nice when, and so I guess like when you were asking me, when did I gain the confidence? Like that one song that I was like, that I wrote, that I was like, I don't know, I kind of think this is good, but like, I also wrote it as a gift and to my brother. So like, you know, if he doesn't like it, I have to like it because it's about him.
Right.
But like, that was kind of the validation. And I hate to say, because I feel like I'm thinking about this all the time with like social media dilemma and the like the balance and health, mental health with all of that stuff. And we don't want to live our lives from seeking validation, but there is an element of like when somebody likes that song that like you also really like, it feels good.
Definitely.
Yeah. But then it's not about I don't know, like validation that purely comes from social media and from, I feel like that's always false validation.
Right. Yeah. There's definitely a distinction between like good validation and not good validation. And you don't want to be like a validation monster, just like doing everything for validation, but like a little boost knowing that, you know, what you set out to do, touch somebody.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, of course that's good fuel.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Feels good.
Yeah, no doubt. I wanted to ask you, I read about, you taking some time, like on a solo trip going to Colorado. I wanted to know, you know, what prompted you taking some time alone and what that did for the album.
Yeah. I do a lot of solo trips. I find them to be very, just helpful in my mental health. And also I think part of it too is sometimes when you're traveling with somebody else, like you don't get to just kind of be super free. Like, you're always like, are you hungry? Are you?
Sure.
So I enjoy solo trips for that reason too. But there were two different trips, one to Colorado and then one to the Pacific Northwest that I took by myself. And the Pacific Northwest trip was to write and to hike. And then the Colorado trip I took was purely just to like adventure and do scary things by myself. And it was actually pretty, some of them were really scary. I summited one 13,000 foot mountain and then one 14,000 foot mountain.
Whoa.
It was so hard. And I just like pitched a tent and camped and it's so beautiful out there. Like,
yeah. Were both of those in Colorado?
Both of those. Yeah. The 13 and 14 were both in Colorado and I did them, back to back, like each.
Wow.
And then flew home. Like I planned this trip on the backside of playing a couple shows in Denver and the Denver area. And so I had like maybe 3 days or something like that. So I was like, okay, I want to do this mountain. And initially the mountain that I wanted to do was even harder. And I like rented snowshoes and was like, I'm from Florida, by the way.
Oh, so okay.
I was like, I'm like, okay. With these snowshoes, I'm gonna climb up this. It was a 14,000 foot mountain, but then that connected to another 14,000 foot mountain, and it would have required me to like get up at 2 a.m. and like get to the spot in pitch black. And I was like, I'm not gonna do that one. But I did two other ones that I got up at like four. You have to get up at like 4 a.m. there because if you're not off the mountain by the afternoon, like you could actually get swept off. The winds are so strong.
Yeah, for sure. Great. Were you doing Long's Peak? What were you doing?
It wasn't Long's Peak. I'm gonna blank on the name right now.
Were you in Rocky Mountain National Park?
Yes.
Yeah, I went out there and did. We caught a show at Red Rocks after like 3 days of backpacking, like some backcountry camping. It was really cool.
That's awesome. It is so beautiful out there. I'm trying to remember the name. I'm totally blanking. I was like, he's gonna ask me and I'm not gonna remember.
That's okay.
One of them there was like nobody on. It was the 13,000 foot one. It started with an O, but I can't remember. And the last bit was so scary. It was like the straight what do they call it? The scree fields or whatever. It was just straight like shambles. And I didn't see it. I saw goats the whole time. And I was like, this is really dangerous. And
yeah.
At one point I lost my phone. I was taking a picture of the goats probably. And then I lost my phone in the snow and was like,
oh no.
What am I doing? I was like, what am I doing up here?
I totally know the feeling.
It was fine and I made it back before. That was the day two. There was a big storm coming in. So I like lost my phone. It like fell out of my pocket. And then I didn't see anybody that whole time. And then it was really scary at the top. But yeah, those trips for me are always different. Like that trip felt super just like healing, and the being alone felt really necessary and just great. I really enjoyed just being with myself. But then the trip I took to the Northwest, I just really was like in a kind of darker place. I was still like kind of dealing with relationship stuff and then just like settling some stuff in myself. And that trip, and I also got like really sick and I was trying to write and I was like, all these songs are about loneliness and and then I got a fever. And so that was a different trip. I didn't feel like it was so beautiful. I hiked part of Mount St. Helens and then just did a bunch of like hikes around Mount St. Helens and Mount Rainier. And it was so beautiful, but I just felt like right now I'm not supposed to be alone. And so that's one thing I've been learning, I feel like, lately, is there are times to just seek your community and be like, hey, I gotta like figure some stuff out. I need some support right now. And then there are times where you can just go and the solitude is really helpful and healthy. But yeah.
Sometimes those things can pile up quickly, you know. And if you're feeling bad, and then you're isolated, and then one other variable happens, like you get sick, like it just you really can get caught in the axle, and it gets hard to get out.
Yeah. But I'm grateful for that too. I think I needed to learn that lesson, and also just to be, I think sitting in loneliness is a really valuable kind of lesson or thing to like try on, because everybody experiences loneliness at some point, and we can choose a variety of things to like get ourselves out of that feeling because it's so uncomfortable. And I'm sure, like, especially this year where a lot of people are alone, trapped in their house, and like loneliness is real, and it can't really be easily fixed by going to run to like, you know, a show with a lot of people or whatever. But yeah, I think it's important to kind of sometimes sit with those feelings when they come up.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think it's really cool. I thought kind of what you were, I had read a quote about your trip and how, you know, some of the isolation in the mountains, you know, helped you feel like some of the emotions you were trying to avoid.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, you know, you mentioned social media and stuff. It's like so easy to distract yourself. And there was this idea, I don't really remember where it came from. It honestly could have been Ram Dass, but I think it was in like a meditation kind of course I was doing. And it was saying like the shelf life of an emotion, like anger, usually, like if you really allow yourself just to feel the anger and not distract yourself or anything like that, and just allow the emotion to well up and come to fruition, it doesn't last long.
Mm-hmm.
What makes anger or another emotion last a long time is like the thinking about it and like perpetuating it. But we spend so much time either fueling the fire or avoiding the fire in general that like we never fully feel the emotion and just let it like give it its time and let it dissipate. You know, we spend a lot of time avoiding feeling it head on.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was such a cool idea. And it what you were saying about, you know, taking time alone to actually feel the stuff that's been on your mind or on your heart, like really, it made me think of that.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's so important. I don't know if you're a Brené Brown fan, but I am a major Brené Brown fan, and she talks a lot about that. And it's super hard to do. Well, we're taught to like not be angry, and
Right. Especially
as women, we're not supposed to like, supposed to be quiet. And I like grew up in the church, and a lot of this book that I'm reading now deals with this, but to not, you know, yell and like to not scream or not cry in public, and all this stuff that, is really natural. Like our emotions are natural and they're right. They're all correct. Like they're not, and so to suppress them and let them fester is so unhealthy. And you're right. I think the shelf life, like if we just gave ourselves like time and the freedom to be angry, we would kind of like, I don't know, get that out of our systems a little bit faster and not let it just fester there while we're trying to like exist and like go about our days.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't want people to think I'm like some kind of rage monster, but like for me, it's like my, you know, my temper. And most of the time, like maybe it's just a little Irish stoicism, but I like just push it down and push it down and push it down. And then like, I don't have any reaction except for like twice a year, and I just totally blow my lid. And, you know, instead, like, you know, what I've been trying to do is like, let the emotion, like feel the thing head on, you know, just let it hit me. Not, and that doesn't mean like I act out by any means. I try my very best not to act out, but like, you know, at the expense of somebody else. But like, for me personally, like, just like, let the thing happen, let the emotion take place. And then it goes away if I don't stoke the fire.
Yeah.
I think for a creative pursuit, like writing an album or, you know, having a better life, I think it's really the thing to do is just, you know, integrate with it.
Yeah. Also in relationships, that's something that I feel like I've been learning when my partner and I, we had tried our relationship and then we were not quite ready in ourselves to do it. And then we were like, we need to try couples therapy. So we have been in couples therapy since we got back together, and it's been mind blowing and just like, oh, I guess I never learned how to have a relationship, because when would I have? I've
made
solid examples of that in my life. So, so like, I think that's been one thing that's so uncomfortable, but so like really necessary to learn. Like when somebody's angry at you, that's okay. Like they might be angry, and just to let them be angry and not be like, are you okay? What can I do? And be like, all right, like I'm going to give you your space. Anger is okay. Excuse me. It's okay to be angry, and it's okay to give that person time.
Yeah. You okay?
Yeah, I just got.
Okay.
I got angry.
Just let it out. This is the place for it.
That's such a thing that I didn't learn. Like, and I think, it's really important to like let other people express their emotions too, and not make them feel like they're not right or not correct. Like. Giving them space and time and knowing that it's not about you either, and not making it about yourself.
Right. Yeah. That's, that was one of the things that I really loved, about a lot of the songs. It was like a theme throughout the album. But especially in your song Tangled Love, I thought like the writing for that was just so mature. You hear songs about failed relationships all the time, and rightfully so. It's like when everybody knows, you know, how that the grief of a lost relationship. But I thought your writing was so mature because it really showed the like co-conspiratorial nature of like a relationship that's failing. Like it's not just like, you did this, like it's all you. It's like you can tell like it's something that you really sat with and took time to think about. Like maybe, you know, in a bad relationship you are being brought down, but for some reason, and we don't always know why, we like hop on for the ride. And I think that's something that you said, like you're taking me down, but I'm gonna go, like, or I willingly go.
Yeah, that was a song that I wrote. I like kind of some space and time to like figure out codependency and that was a really hard thing to like to sit with. And so that song came a bit after that, after I'd kind of like went to some Al-Anon meetings, and like my partner, he needed to get sober before we could get back together, and I needed to sit with my codependency stuff. And so that song was definitely like a reflection of that really challenging part of our relationship and time. It's like, I can't, he's not the only one to blame. Like my faults are this and this, like I can see it. Or maybe I, like a lot of the codependency stuff, like it was really a hard lesson because I was like, oh my gosh, I see how I'm the contributor to your unhealthy habits as well. Like instead of kind of just like putting an end to it, or, and sometimes in a relationship is like the healthiest thing you can do, but But yeah, like that line is definitely like, I'm willingly going into this, even though I know it's unhealthy and it's continuing to be unhealthy and I'm unhealthy and you're unhealthy, but we're in this labyrinth together and we're like stuck in it and somebody needs to pull the plug. But yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was like a very real take from a very honest perspective. And most of the time with, songs of that nature, you don't really get that. Usually you get something a little bit more one-dimensional. And I just thought it was a very profound thing. And, you know, definitely something that you can learn from, you know, people who are codependent, like in Al-Anon meetings are great for that. You learn a lot about how, you know, you can also make change or like take your part of a bad relationship.
Yeah, it was so, I'm so happy that I experienced that because it also makes you feel not alone. And I imagine this is how people feel with like AA meetings. When you get to sit and hear somebody else's story and just like see the similarities in your lives, it's so helpful because you one see like, oh, I'm not alone. And you also see like, oh, they're okay. Like I'm okay. And we had this like community and, that was really helpful. It also just, it helped me. It was just like, it was such an aha moment of oh my gosh. Yeah. I do this, and I haven't put a name to it or I haven't put, I just didn't see it. And then seeing other areas where like, oh, I can be kind of codependent in that area. And so I think that was really helpful. And I kind of just like worked out some of that stuff for a while. And, but yeah, it's so great to have like a community of people to be able to talk about this stuff with in a free space. Yeah, I'm so grateful for programs like that.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's an amazing thing. And that's, kind of goes back to like, on one hand, you need to make sure that you're spending enough time like alone and working on yourself. And then on the other hand, there are going to be times where you do need people, you know, like no man or no woman's an island. Yeah. So you gotta have both for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was another thing, in, I think it's the first song on the album, Occasionally. Mm-hmm. And it was so interesting to me because when I was listening to it, and maybe, it, you know, obviously you listen to things through your own lens, and I had the impression that it was about a relationship. But at the same time, I was thinking like, man, for anybody who's like had any grieving or like trauma, like it just, and I very loosely, you know, say trauma. I don't think I can comfortably say I've had any trauma. But like when something that really shakes you happens, the way that you sang occasionally, and you know, you talked about like the way you go on feeling like you're fine and then it crosses, you know, you yeah. cross my mind or it crosses your mind. And it was just like, to me, I was thinking, wow, like that is exactly what it feels like when something really shakes you up.
Yeah.
And then I was learning that the song kind of took a double meaning for you. Later, I was reading that you had kind of an event happen in Nashville where the song kind of took new meaning.
Yeah, it was kind of a more of a relationship song until that happened. And I wrote it with the person Jordan Lenning, who I co-produced the record with. And we had talked about it in more of a relationship standard. But then when I performed it at, this was the last show before COVID happened, and it was a benefit show for the tornado, like for people that lost everything in the tornado. And I performed it that night, and I was working on it. It was right after the tornado happened, and I was like sitting by myself with it, and I was like, this is how I'm feeling. Like, I was trying to figure out, like, how to keep going in my days when I would be in with people and then all of a sudden just have, like, a panic attack. or just have really bad anxiety. And I have a great therapist, luckily, but we did some like EDMR stuff during that time, which really helped kind of calm me down and just work through some of that stuff. But it was a really scary experience. Like my room, I was in my room right before it happened. And then walking down the stairs, really running down the stairs while it was a piling went through my wall and like right across my bed. So
wow,
I just had that, like the images. And then we were out of the house for a month, like during in March, like when COVID started. So it was really, it was a really crazy experience. And my house wasn't even the worst. Like my house was saved compared to my neighbor's houses. And my neighborhood is still just, I don't know. It's still in shambles. So it was, yeah, that song definitely took a new meaning. And I think that's such a beautiful thing about songwriting and that the songs can morph into, again, it's like the interpreter's point of view. Like, what am I sitting with right now? Like, and then interpreting the song in whatever way that feels right in that moment for you. So yeah, definitely a crazy experience.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had anything close to that. But I grew up in Ohio. And for anybody who hasn't had any kind of brush with the tornado, I lived in Florida for like 7 years and dealt with hurricanes and blizzards, all that kind of stuff in other places. The feeling of a tornado is so eerie. I mean, yeah. It's like you know that there's this giant monster somewhere and yeah. It's black outside and it's sometimes quiet and sometimes the wind is just whipping. It is the weirdest, creepiest thing. And I've had close encounters, but nothing like that. And so I can only imagine like how scary that must have been.
Yeah, I also grew up with hurricanes. It was so different. Like you have a couple days to prepare for a hurricane.
Yeah.
They're still scary, but like you can board up your house. Like you know that they're coming. Like, this is like, okay, tornado's coming in 3 minutes. Like
you hear the siren and then like everything yeah. turns black and you're like, oh my gosh, like this thing could be anywhere.
Yeah, like the power, what's it called? The boxes or the diffusers or whatever, they're like exploding and you hear just like this chaos. It's kind of like the smoke monster in Lost.
Yeah, exactly.
I just started watching Lost during the pandemic, so I'm like,
nice. Oh yeah, you're gonna torture yourself.
Yeah, oh, I'm in deep, man. But yeah, it's really spooky and I hope that we don't have to go through that again. But my insurance company was really great and my friends are really great. My community was so helpful and literally like out there the next day clearing debris from my house and my yard. And so we made it through and we're fine and we kind of got to redo elements of the house. So yeah.
Yeah, still, it's something that like sticks with you. And I'm sure I've never had like an event like that. But, you know, there have been sudden things that have happened in my life that I, you know, just stayed with me for weeks and months. And they just creep out of, you know, they creep into your head out of nowhere, or they're prompted by something and it just hits you like a ton of bricks. So yeah. So your song occasionally does a really good job of, you know, of drawing that comparison, you know, between maybe grief or trauma or the loss of a relationship, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. So Lydia, tell people where they can find your album.
Well, it will be out February 26th. On Spotify, Apple, just all of the streaming places. And I also have some like vinyl and CDs.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Awesome. I think CDs and vinyl are the way to go.
Yeah.
Especially now when shows are so limited. Like it really gives people that love you an opportunity to support you through physical, you know, physical products.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We like when you buy vinyl.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. before I let you go, so you did name the album Dark River, and I guess you were saying it was a toss-up between Labyrinth and Dark River, but I think you made the right choice. Were you familiar with like the Waters of Lethe?
No.
I think I'm saying that right. Oh, it's really cool. And your song, the title song, Dark River, the Waters of Lethe were like this, one of the rivers in the underworld in like Greek mythology.
Ooh.
Yeah. And when you drank from the river, it was, you would experience like forgetfulness. You would forget things. And in your song, in the title song, you talk about like drinking from that river, the Dark River. And I was like, oh my God, that is so cool. Like, that's exactly like, you know, the Greek mythology.
Wow. That is so awesome. Wow. That makes me want to dig into that.
Yeah. I'll send you some stuff. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
It makes sense because the whole part of that is like, you're going to escape this external noise and like people wanting things from you and like just overexerting yourself. And you're going down to this, like this sacred place. But drinking from that dark river to forget or to escape makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I know. Cool. That's what was so crazy about it. That's what I was like, I wonder if she must know about this. And so,
but I'm so happy you told me. That's awesome.
Yeah. The other cool part about it, to your point about like, you know, escaping what's going on, I think, again, I don't really know all this stuff. Like I have like a basic outline of some of these stories, but I think what would happen is like when you would die in Greek mythology and then you would go be sent to the underworld, if you were going to be reincarnated, you had to drink from that river to forget. And so, so, you know, you go down there, like you're struggling and you go down there and you drink from the dark river and then you're kind of reborn in a way.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's just really cool that you incorporated all of that into your music and sometimes knew and sometimes didn't. I think that's just like a testament to your connection with I don't know, the universe maybe.
Well, also, it's for me, and maybe it's the same way in Greek mythology, but like the nature references and the references to the natural world are, we can also identify with that. Like I didn't know that myth, but me like expressing that, like for me going down to a sacred river, like to be alone in nature and run away from like external noise. Like, I think that it's coming from the same place. Like there's so many references to nature and the natural world and like in Greek mythology. So in that way, yeah, like I didn't know that, but I too, I don't know, I get that. I get that, like, why they would reference a river, because it's a powerful thing. It's a beautiful, powerful thing. So, makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you seem like a very intuitive and empathic person, Lydia, and it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. So,
likewise. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. You were doing I wanted to mention you were doing a benefit concert in March, is that right?
Yeah. So, well, it's kind of to show the neighborhood, and it's going to be on March 3rd, which is the 1 year anniversary. Is such a weird word to describe a tragedy like the tornado, but of the tornado. And so we'll be doing a show in the backyard and like showing the neighborhood and how there's still just like pieces missing and all the damage that happened. So that will be March 3rd.
Awesome. And then the album Dark River will be out on February 28th?
26th.
All right. Well, be sure to buy CDs and vinyl of this album. You're going to love it. And Lydia, thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course, anytime.
Yeah. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Lydia for coming on the show. If you enjoyed this podcast and like to hear more, head over to our website, setlist.community. We've got all of our previous podcasts, our blog posts, and our merchandise there. To play us out, we have the title track from Lydia Luce's new album, Dark River. It's going to be available for stream and purchase this Friday, so check it out. Thanks again for tuning in, and enjoy Dark River.
They can't see me there. I'm gonna dream till my belly's full.